Welcome to Association Chat, my friends. It's an online discussion where we warm ourselves by the virtual fire with topics of the day, welcoming thought leaders and trailblazers alike to join up in this online home and community. I am the host of Association Chat, Kiki Letalien. And are you caring for loved ones at home? Are you raising kids? Are you caring for sick or elderly parents at the same time? Are you tired? Are you exhausted? Are you okay? According to Pew Research Center, more than half of Americans in their 40s are sandwiched between an aging parent and their own children. In fact, by the time they're in their 50s, a majority of those in their 50s, 59%, and those 60 and older, 83%, are sandwiched between an aging parent and an adult child they've helped financially. This is hard stuff. This is what many of us are dealing with. And that's why today I've invited Brita Miller, a storyteller, a speaker, to join us on today's show. You may have seen her on The Moth Story Hour on NPR or picked up one of her books for caregivers. But today I want you to welcome her to Association Chat. Welcome, Brita. Thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
All right. I tell you, it's been a while since we first met. Brita and I met and we had this long conversation that was just, it was so full and rich and amazing. And we shared stories with each other, and we haven't spoken with each other since then. So I invited her to come onto the show. And Brita, I have to say, one of the things that really impressed me when we spoke was that you had a brutal honesty, but you were kind and funny about a very tough topic, this topic of being a caregiver. At the same time, you had all of these different components. And I'm like, how does this exist in one woman? But I wanted to talk with you today to maybe you could share with us a little bit of background about the day you first realized that being a caregiver for your kids and for your mom was taking a toll on your well-being.
Oh, yes. I remember it vividly, so vividly. It is a focal point of a play that I wrote about my experience, honestly.
There's a play that came out of this. It was a vivid moment.
It did. And it was, I remember it was Thursday. It was shower day. I love my mom, but I had no training. And I hated giving my mom a shower. And it was the most stressful thing I ever had to deal with, because she was terrified of falling and I had no training. My phone was ringing off the hook. I had the worst of both worlds. I had an office in my home. I never got to leave.
Oh my gosh.
And so, the phone was ringing off the hook. I was late with a proposal for a client. The dog threw up. I had already changed mom's bedding 3 times that day. I was not sleeping well. I was over the edge. And at 4 o'clock, my sweet son, Evan, simply asked, "What's for dinner, mom?"
Oh my gosh. And you're like,
I lost my mind. My kids can tell you what a conniption looks like. And I collapsed and I slammed the bathroom door and I just started crying. And I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm not cut out for this. I didn't sign up for this. I don't know what I'm doing. I am a terrible daughter. I am a worse mother. I can't keep going and I need help. Mm-hmm. When I looked up in the mirror, sidebar, I had managed to put mascara on that day. God knows why. Maybe to go out. I looked in the mirror and Alice Cooper was looking back at me. And I thought, this is not going to end well. And I realized that if I didn't get some help, I could go before her.
Yeah.
And that was the point when I realized, okay, sweetie, you need to get some help. You need to find some resources. You need to figure this out, because you cannot keep doing what you're doing. It's not good for anybody.
You know, one thing I've noticed is that when you start looking around for help, when you start looking around and thinking, okay, so, you know, who has the answers and where do I have, you know, for all of Google's merits and for all of the experiences that we've had to a certain point, it really seems like we're left with what AARP has published or something. And there's just not a ton of resources that are out there that tell you how to deal with these very real feelings. And the shame that comes along with admitting that it's hard. Can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you think the reason is for this, the shame that we feel for even, I mean, I feel guilty if there's a problem in thinking about how to care for my mother, right? And yeah. So why is that?
This is the perfect question, Kiki, because I've been really thinking about this lately. And because when people come to see the play that I wrote, they tell me how they feel this burden of guilt being lifted, how they feel better. Mm-hmm. They feel seen and they feel heard, because a couple of things happen. When I was my mom's caregiver, I had three young teenagers in the house. I had an office in my home. I was able to do much of the work over the telephone. I managed a business. And I have never felt so isolated in my entire life. And here, there's two things I want to say. Number one, when my children were small, I would go to these little mommy and me play groups, right? Mm-hmm. And we'd meet up with other moms and we'd have coffee and everyone. And we would talk about stuff. And, you know, they'd talk about potty training and they'd say, oh, so are you using the pull-ups or are you going with the cloth pants? And, you know, what about the M&Ms? And are you bribing? And what are you doing? And how are you handling
it? It's so true. Right? It's so true. The Pampers, Huggies, like whole thing, loves. Yeah, oh, my gosh. Decision about yeah, right. Can.
What's normal and what is normal, right?
Yeah.
So fast forward, my kids are teenagers. My mom becomes incontinent. And to be fair, I was really worried about my new couch. Okay. Just saying.
Yeah. No, and, but it's a fair thing. I mean, we work so hard. We get a new couch. You know,
one said to me, Sabrina, how's your mom? Are you using Depends or is there another brand you like? You know, how's that going? Is that, you know, no. Nobody brought it up. Nobody said these things happen. I didn't understand a UTI and what it can mean and dehydration and all these kinds of things. And, you know, it boiled down to I didn't know what I didn't know. But here's the second part that I've just really come to realization about how one of the reasons caregivers, you know, we are the worst when it comes to taking care of ourselves. I still call myself a recovering caregiver. But what I learned was that when you are caring for a child with a broken limb or someone who might have a curable disease like cancer or something else that is hard and you're in the thick of it, but you're having treatments, you're having surgeries, you're taking medication and they get better and you feel good. And you think, you know what? I helped them. This is great. When you are caring for a frail elderly parent with Alzheimer's disease or dementia or Parkinson's or ALS or any number of things, they're not going to get better. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how good you are. It doesn't matter. I mean, yes, it matters how hard you try, but it's not about getting the medicine schedule on, getting the right doctors, getting the right therapies, adapting your home so that it's safe. All of these things that we do, and we do them out of love. But oftentimes we are so hard on ourselves because the outcome isn't good. They're not going to be cured. They're not going to be the mom that we knew and loved 10 years ago. And one of the hardest things for me is when my mom passed on, I felt so guilty because I felt so relieved for her and for me. And then I stopped and I realized, hang on, girlfriend. You've been grieving for 3 years. The mom that you used to sit and chat with and have tea, that you would go shopping with and have great discoveries at TJ Maxx, the mom that you would go on trips with, she's gone. She's gone. And I loved my mom and I cared for her and I did everything I could to maintain her dignity for her, but also very selfishly for me. I didn't want to have regrets. And I thought, whatever I can do, how can I do it that will be helpful to her and that killed me at the same time. So,
right. Were you honest with your friends at the time? I'll tell you what is feeding this question is I have some friends who have taken in their parents and, they're stressed, and I can tell that they are. They have not been able to engage in a lot of the activities that they used to. And yet when I see them, they put on the happy face, they put on the smile, and they say, oh, well, you know, my father, he can be a rascal, but things are going okay, you know, dementia, you know, and I have this idea that what's really going on inside is something that is not just put on the happy face and fine. And I'm caught between this wanting to allow them to just enjoy their time and not have to dive into it for a moment versus saying, hey, are you really okay? What's really going on? You know, Were you able to be honest?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. So here's the really good news for you. Your friends are able to meet you. You're able to go somewhere. I couldn't leave my mom alone. Yeah. And those times when I got someone to stay with her so that she was safe, that she fell or something like that, I had really limited time to go grocery shopping or to get my hair done or to do something. And I didn't go out with my friends. I have a group of six women that I'm very close with. And I got to say, I think for 3 or 4 years, they would invite me. They kept inviting me. And it was so much work and so hard to find someone to be there for mom. And my husband worked midnights. So it was really hard because he needed to sleep during the day. And my kids were young teenagers. And it was just easier for me to not go and to not participate. And that was so unlike. You can tell I'm not exactly a shrinking violet here. but I will say that after my mom passed away, it was maybe 3 or 4 months. My friends went to a local place for a happy hour and I went with them. But I got to tell you, we got there at like 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And at 4:30, I immediately started to look at my watch and thought, oh, I got to get back. You know, I got to make mom's dinner or I got to get the meds. I was still on the leash mentally, even though I wasn't. And it took me a long time to stop feeling guilty about doing things and to allow myself to do that. So that was one of the reasons that I was inspired to do the work that I do now, is that I lived it, I survived it, and I was never perfect. You know, I did the best I could on any given day, and some days were better than others. But I found through humor and through being creative and resourceful that people could learn from the mistakes I made. You know, I use myself as a cautionary tale. I never want to say I was the perfect caregiver, but I did everything I could to maintain my mom's dignity and my sanity. And those were often really difficult things.
I have to tell you, I have so many questions and even questions that came in before we showed up today to do this episode. So I want to make sure that I ask those, but I want to continue this thread on the creativity part, because this is about take a break before you break. What role did creativity play for you? I have to just share with people. I have a couple of these books here. Obviously you can see I'm taking my notes. I have a couple of these books here. Check them out, everyone. And did the creativity start while you were still acting as caretaker for your mother, or was this after she passed? You know,
well, you know, this the seeds of behaviors and things started while I was her caregiver. One, so I have been an actor and I have done a lot of different things, and I knew a lot about improv. And one day I realized when you're caring for, and this helped my mindset, instead of being frustrated, because, you know, in the olden days, which was maybe even 10 years ago, when people cared for someone with dementia, one of the standard practices was to bring them back into your reality. And there would be things having signs up everywhere. Today is Tuesday, you know, today is October. And that was really important. And it ended up being, you know, an exercise in futility for someone who has a short-term memory of maybe 10 minutes, right? What's the point? Why are you even doing this? You know, it's not helpful. It's just annoying to the person and to you. Anyway, I had this mindset about improv. So when my mom would talk about something that was from many years ago or about something that happened that she really believed to be true, I just kind of went with the flow. And, you know, the first rule of improv is that when your partner in the skit makes a statement, you agree and you say, yes. And then blah, 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 right? That's how it works. You don't say, oh no, that didn't happen. I don't like that storyline. We're not doing that. You know, that does not work. So I use that mindset of improv because I never knew who was going to walk out of her bedroom any particular day, what era she was in, whether she was cranky, at one point she looked at me and I'll use her voice. She said, you're an alcoholic. And I was shocked. And she said, Mom, I don't drink. I can't be an alcoholic. Denial, the first sign. At the moment, I was devastated because my father was an alcoholic and she must have been projecting on me, him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now it's hysterical. I mean, it's really funny that she was so quick, you know, denial. That's the first sign. How do you respond to that? Right.
I know.
So at the moment, I'm not going to say I thought it was very funny. I did not. It really upset me. And then I think it upset me even more because I called my brothers to tell them this. I have four brothers. I'm the only girl, the default caregiver. And they thought it was hysterical. They thought it was really funny. And I was really annoyed with them to say, no, this is a terrible accusation. This is so unfair. And when you're in the moment like that, you have to step aside and you have to stop and give grace and say, it's okay. Her brain is not the same brain. She's not seeing me. For some reason, she was seeing my dad.
Mm. Well, this idea of being able to say yes, and can you share with us the story about the good Brita and the bad Brita?
Yes. So when mom often thought there were two Britas, mm-hmm. and she would complain to me. Now the bad, you know, she would complain to me about the bad Brita, who you know, tried to make her take mind altering drugs like Advil. The bad Brita who, you know, refused to give her coffee and tea during the night because she wasn't sleeping. Mm-hmm. And one day she was really cranky and she looked at me and she said, I want to see both Britas in here at the same time. I don't want to have to repeat myself. And I looked at her and I was exhausted. I just didn't have it in me. And I said, Mom, there's just me. There's only one Brita. And she says, oh. And is the other Brita too busy on her computer to come in and talk to me? And so when she would talk, one time I even went out into the hallway and I put on sunglasses and a scarf and a different hat, you know, to think if that would work. And she was on to me and she said, and where's the other one? You know, she wasn't going for it.
Yeah.
So I used it as instead of getting annoyed and trying to, you know, constantly remind her there was only me, I used it. And I said, really, Mom, what did she do now? And I could get the inside scoop on what was, you know, really going on in her head. And then she'd tell me the secret about what Brita did that really upset her.
Oh, yeah. So you got the inside scoop. Exactly. On what was going on with the bad Brita.
And, you know, not everybody can think, you know, that quickly or to be that adaptive. So fine, do it the next day or do it the next mm-hmm. time. But it's about a mindset. My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's disease and she would come and we would care for her on the weekends to give my sister-in-law a break. And one day she looked at me and she said, I don't know who you are, but I know I like you. And it was such a compliment.
Right.
But her daughter told me, well, if she said that to me, I would be so offended. And I think to myself, it, you know, I have a different relationship with my mother-in-law and I have that luxury of distance.
Yeah.
But when a person with dementia or Alzheimer's or any other mind-altering illness says something, they're not They're not trying to be unkind. They're not trying to be cruel. It's where their brain is. And you, as the sane adult in the room,
right.
You need to find a way to not let it hurt you and find a way to respond in a kind and loving way that when they're gone, you're not going to look back and say, oh, I can't believe I was so snappy. I can't believe I was so short-tempered. You know, to give them grace.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's so hard to not just be in the moment, but when you're juggling so many things. We talked about in the intro about the sandwich generation and this idea of you're responsible. So many of us are responsible for our kids at this point. We're responsible for our jobs, you know, because a lot of us also have to work at the same time. And then, you know, and I think especially over the past few years, because of this working from home, which can be a gift and a curse, right? We are also in this position where a lot of times we're trying to manage and be responsible for all of these things from a home base and incorporate caregiving for a parent.
So true. The line I came up with, and I say this in the play, Mrs. Kelly's Journey Home, no matter what I did, I felt I was letting somebody down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When does that stop? I mean, how does that stop?
Yeah.
Where do you go from there? What did you come up with?
So I gave myself permission to take care of myself. And here's a couple of things that I learned about self-care when it comes to really everybody in the last few years, whether it's your job, your children, your spouse, a parent, other relatives, financial worries, whatever, is that you have to take a break before you break. And that is about being preemptive. You know, it's one thing, like when I was in a puddle on the bathroom floor, not my best moment, right?
Yeah.
But what I realized is that I've learned to know my body. And number one, I need to rest. I need to sleep. Because when you are caring for several people or just one person who's really challenging, you need to be mentally agile. You need to be able to respond. You need to be resourceful to think of, she's agitated. What can I do? Music, by the way, is one of the quickest ways to get somebody out of a funk or to get somebody to change their mindset or change their tone if they're wound up pretty tightly. But you have to give yourself permission. Maybe it's to take a nap. Maybe it's to put your feet up, to close your eyes. Maybe it is to go for a walk. Whatever is your thing, you cannot feel guilty about it. And because if you don't do it, you are going to be cranky. You are not going to be, you know, quick-witted. You are not going to be able to respond in the way that you're going to feel proud of how you handled something. So if you think, oh, I can't go away for a weekend because, you know, mom likes the way I make her food, or nobody else could really, you know, do that for her. I'm the only one who knows the way she likes it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of things happen when you give yourself permission to care for yourself. You don't feel as resentful. And when you are resentful and you're caring for someone, they feel it. They know it. And I didn't want my mom to feel that she was a burden. So that's one thing. But the second thing is you're going to have your faculties, you're going to feel better. So giving yourself permission to do the thing or the things that you need to do. And maybe you're in such a challenging place right now that you have to do micro breaks, 5 minutes. And maybe you say, you know what, at 3:15 today, I'm going to go for a walk. And maybe I can't go far because mom can't be left alone for an hour or 2 hours. But I'm just going to walk down the block and back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm going to do it 3 times, so I'm not that far away.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to gift myself with a massage. And I have to tell you, when my mom was near the end of her life and she was in hospice care in my home for 7 months, and she was declining, but my mom always had this, she was a spunky little Irish woman. And she used to always say, we'd be at a restaurant, she's drinking her coffee, and she'd say, I will not be rushed. Well, the hospice people kept telling me, you know, we don't know how much longer she can hang on. You know, she's, we think the end is very near. 3 months later.
She couldn't be rushed.
My husband even joked and said, we should put that on her headstone. I will not be rushed. So well, I say it with love. It's not about, you know, it's about finding humor in the situation, and it's not mocking the person.
Right.
And what I try to do is I try to speak honestly and candidly about the things that are unspoken.
Yes. Yes. And I appreciate that so much, because I think that that's what people respond to, is not just that you're such a great storyteller and that you can embody Mrs. Kelly and all of this, but I think it's also that there is this, this candid honesty while being, you're caring, but you're also hilarious in that you're sharing the truth. And we just need that. We need that truth, because to your point earlier, it is so hard to find people who are speaking candidly and openly about those things. Like, oh my gosh, can we talk about just not wanting your couch to be destroyed, right? I mean, well, like,
this is not a Hallmark movie, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
And at the same time, it's a fine line between being really honest, but not being brutally honest. You know, I'm not looking to, embarrass anyone. At the very end of the play, my mom talks about how she's in heaven at this point, and she says that she's so happy the way that I keep her close with all the stories. Mm-hmm. And then she looks at the audience and she says, although a few I could do without. but it is about good humor, and people relate to it. You know, you asked before about resources and what did I do? And I'll tell you this, I had a stack of books next to my bed, and I called them my pile of good intentions. Great books, great resources. And you know, I was so exhausted and so tired. I couldn't, you know, I'd get through two pages and I would be out like a light.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that inspired me to write the first book, The Caregiver Coffee Break. I wanted something very compact, very accessible, something light and chatty that you could read when you're sitting in the doctor's appointment, you know, office, that could give you, and the way it's designed is that each page is one idea. It's one thought. It's maybe a coping mechanism. Maybe it's a resource. Maybe it's just a clever idea. And the thing is, it's a way to help people in a way that is not overwhelming, because we get enough overwhelm going on.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do something helpful. But the other thing you asked about creativity, and this was something that I have not really shared much. And when I think about it, it was one of the best gifts. So my mom was in hospice care. In the last 2 months, she was just in an invalid. She was just in bed, and I wanted to be near her. But honestly, there wasn't anything to do. She had a vascular dementia because of congestive heart failure. So she wasn't, you know, it was not chemotherapy or, you know, cancer or wounds or anything that was painful. So she was just declining, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I want to be present with her. What am I going to do? She can't really talk. She can't listen to an audiobook. She couldn't do so many things that she used to love to do. So I had my laptop with me, and I thought, okay, I'm the only daughter. I am the keeper of all the family stories, the family photos, the certificates, all these different things about my parents' immigration story from Ireland. And I thought, I should do this. So I scanned all these pictures and I put together a narrative, and I did an online photo album of my parents and my brothers. And what was so healthy, and I didn't realize how healthy it was at the time, but instead of looking at this tiny little 100-pound woman that was disappearing before my eyes in the bed, I'm spending time near her, looking on my laptop at these photos of this vibrant, energetic woman who moved to America pretty much against her will, because it was completely my dad's idea, and raised five children and became this extraordinary woman. She was this very timid little traditional Irish woman, comes to America, meets meets a good friend and joins Now. And
Are you kidding? Oh, yeah, I love it.
The Marxist, you know, Equal Rights Amendment, all this stuff. So cool. But anyway, I realized this was what I was focusing on, who she really was, because my mom was not defined by the dementia that she experienced. Mm-hmm. That was a part of her life. It was not who she was. And that's one of the really important messages that I share with groups, with organizations to, you know, we look at where we are at this moment, but maybe we can take time to step back and find the goodness, find the joy in whatever we're doing.
Okay. So I am going to turn this into a different direction where I want us to think about the people who are supporting the caregivers, because you mentioned your brothers. What if you're in the situation of, you know, and I'll just go ahead and be totally transparent. My siblings and I, we are sharing care of our mother right now. But the primary caregiver is my brother and sister-in-law. And we've just started this thing where, you know, and she'll come and take, she'll visit with another family and then go back. But my concern is that it's a very complicated situation. And of course, all of our families and significant others are all having, and children are all having to go on this journey with us. But how can a sibling or another family that's part of this support the primary caregiver? Because, you know, one thing I'm really concerned about is burnout for my brother and primarily my sister-in-law, who is as the female in the family, is a lot of that is falling on her shoulders.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a great question that no one ever asked me, by the way. So first of all, my brothers lived out of state, and they said to me, Brita, we trust you. We know you have mom's best interest at heart. You know her physician. You know her situation. We're not going to second guess what you decide. That was the most important thing they could say to me, that they could give to me, so that whenever I told them that, well, you know, they said we should do this or that, I didn't have to feel I had to convince them or justify anything, because I knew they had my back and I knew that they trusted me. And that helped a lot, because they lived great distances away. They mm-hmm. would call her all the time. And I'll tell you one thing that used to drive me nuts. So I'm there in the trenches 24/7, right? My brother comes up from Georgia to Michigan, and you would think, and I love him, and he was great when he was with her, but that's all she talked about. Oh, and he did this, and he did that. And they're taking me
You're
there.
Like, what?
And I'm like, oh, well, I'm chopped liver.
You're chopped liver.
You know, they're here because it's a holiday for them. It's a little vacay. And they take her out to places to do things. And I'm like, yeah, and I've just changed your bedding like 3 times this day, you know. Yeah. So knowing that, be mindful of that when they are effusive over the special guest, the sibling mm-hmm. who comes and tells the person who's there all the time how great they were. Make sure you tell the caregiving primary caregiver how great they are and how much you appreciate what they're doing. Cannot be overstated. Another thing is that what I wished had happened is that if I knew that there was a fixed day or time, once a month or once mm-hmm. a week, that one of my siblings was going to say, so we're coming, or we're going to take mom on Saturday for 4 hours, or we're going to stay with mom for 4 hours. So you go do what you want to do. Don't even think about it. What a gift that would have been. Mm-hmm. A couple of times it happened. They didn't really get what she needed, and she asked to come home early. So, but it doesn't always work out. But if my director barked.
Yes.
But if that is something that I can count on, and not a loosey-goosey thing like, well, you know, if things were out next week, you know, we'll come by. No, mm-hmm. no. Tell me. And then when they come, make sure that the plan is you get to go, or your sister-in-law gets to leave, so that she's not there entertaining you.
Oh, yeah.
Feeding you or having to carry on a conversation and care for mom at the same time, right?
That's the thing I'm always worried about, because, I mean, Annie, if you're listening to this at some point, she is known for, you know, anytime you come by, she will always put out a spread, put out food, and I mean, you know, I try really hard to be like, no, low key. But now that our mother is staying there and there's more and more reason for us to drop by, I'm like, oh my gosh, last thing I want for her to do is to like put herself out or feel like she needs to entertain. So that's wonderful advice. Excellent advice.
I think an example was, so the hospice workers told us that mom was near the end of her life. And I thought, you know, I didn't want to wait till an official holiday, that we would just invite everyone and we'd celebrate mom together while she was still able to do that. And then, you know, the theory of that was really good. The reality was that I not only had to take care of mom, but I had to clean my house and then feed and entertain all of them.
Yeah.
And my mom was obsessed. In fact, this is one of the highlights of the play. It's one of the stories about, I call it the pie that nearly killed me. Mom heard they were coming, and one of my brothers calls her up and says, "Mom, we can't wait to see you. Can't wait for a taste of your delicious apple pie." And from that moment, my mom never let that go. Every day, "Are we making the pie for the boys? The boys love my pie. Did you get the good?" Well, I did not inherit my mother's ability to make pie. Pushed me over the edge. She was relentless about it. And I called up my brother. I said, "What were you saying? Why did you say you couldn't wait to eat her apple pie? Now, you know, I have to make it. She can't make pie anymore." And he said, "Don't worry about it. I'll bring a pie." And that calmed her down for a bit. The day of the party, he walks in with a pie. Cardboard box.
No.
Cellophane window.
No.
The word Kroger across the front. And to add insult to injury, a big sticker that said "half off."
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, I mean, somebody should have put them through a tutorial, I'm thinking. Okay.
And then he says to her, "Oh, but mom," she was appalled and refused even one bite of this store-bought pie.
I know.
And then he says to her, "But mom, it tastes just like yours."
Oh.
I mean, she might have dementia, but she knows apple pie, right?
Right.
But that's an example of someone meaning well and realizing just by making that statement about looking forward to her pie, set off a chain of stress for me that he had no idea.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So I want to ask you a question about setting boundaries, because as wonderful as our parents can be, sometimes they're not always. And especially when there are challenging personality types that are coming into play. Yeah. How do you go about in a situation where you are a caregiver, in setting boundaries where you're not giving too much of yourself, where you really don't have anything left to give?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because you don't know how much time you have. You know, setting boundaries, one of the things, particularly with someone with Alzheimer's disease, their personalities often change, you know, depending on the day of the week. And they might have always been a very sweet, loving person, and now all of a sudden they're angry and they're cursing, or they're talking about inappropriate things, or you're just shocked, right? And so setting boundaries is just reminding yourself that they're not the same person that they were, and what do you need to do so that it makes sense to them. It may not be the logic and the example that you would use in speaking to a peer or a spouse, or someone who's got all their faculties, right? But you have to think about where they're at, and it goes back to giving yourself permission to say, okay, if I'm a wreck, I'm not going to be able to take care of her. And that means, you know, there have to be other people who are going to prepare dinner, or we're going to do carry out. Like my mom, when we would have pizza for dinner, I had to make a separate meal for my mom, because, you know, her Irish taste buds ketchup was sometimes too spicy. Just
yeah, like. Right. So,
but you know what I did? I had a go-to dinner always available that I could make. I microwaved a potato because she had a baked potato probably every day. I had some frozen broccoli or something that I could cut up that she would eat, and a breast of chicken. And it was plain. It was simple. I would cut it up. She could eat it. It was like a toddler meal. But it was what she really liked. And I didn't have to think about it. So then when we had tacos or we had something, I wasn't stressed out, or I wasn't trying to get her to eat something that was either going to upset her stomach or she didn't like or something. So boundaries is about planning. It's about recognizing where you're at. One of the boundaries many people have when they have children, when you're in the caregiver sandwich and all of a sudden Nana or the grandma is complaining about the noise of the kids or discussing something or having a very strong opinion about she's not going out the house that way, is she? Or something about the way the kids are dressed or something that you've already said is okay. Like you're good with this. This is your house. You're the parent. And so that can be hard. And so sometimes you have to, therapeutic fibbing is always helpful. You choose the hill you want to die on. Everything isn't a battle to be won. And sometimes my go-to responses were, really? Is that right?
And then okay. Yes.
You don't argue. You don't try to convince them.
Right.
You be respectful, but you still realize this is your house. These are your children. This is your thing. And you need to find a way, whether it's through improv, whether it's through changing the conversation, diverting, redirecting, or just reinforcing some other positive thing that they know and that they do and that they share with your family.
Rita, yeah, it does. And I'm about to ask a difficult question, potentially difficult, about dealing with spouses and children when they don't like the behavior or the way that things are happening, with the parent, the aging parent that's in the household, being able to take a break for yourself before you break. Part of that is also making sure that you're maintaining and taking care of those relationships between you and your spouse or you and your children. What happens when, there is a disruption or disagreement in that area where it's like, look, you're feeling pressure from both sides?
Yeah, it's the truth. It's the reality. And hopefully you have a loving foundation so that when you have the bumps in the road, which you will, because, bad behavior on anyone's part is not pleasant or fun. And then what you do is you get through it, whatever happened, whether it's an outburst on the part of the elder or on the part of the other family member. You get through that, you get things settled down, and then you talk about it afterwards. And you say things like, that was really hard when Nana said this, but you do know that Nana loves you, or that she was going through, her mind wasn't working right, or she wasn't remembering certain things, or she's very worried about something. So one example is our youngest son is over 6 feet tall, and he cannot walk up the stairs. Okay. His bedroom is upstairs, but he gallops, right? And she used to get really upset. And she would say, she feels like the house is going to come down on top of her because that young one, he gallops up the stairs. He can't walk up the stairs. Well, Evan can't walk up the stairs. Okay. And I tried for years, slow down, walk up the stairs. And he's just always in a hurry. So he runs up the stairs, and yes, it's loud. It's a big old farmhouse. And so I couldn't change his behavior, and I couldn't alter her reaction to his behavior. So I would accept it, and then I would find a good piece of music that she liked, or we would talk about a story and something that she remembered, or I'd say, you know what, Mom, would you like a cup of tea? That was my go-to on just about anything. And have a biscuit or a cookie and just take her out of that place, move her from her room, maybe into the dining room, or to sit on the porch, or to physically move to a different space, change the subject, have some kind of, whether it's music or a favorite television program, something to take it down a notch, take the temperature down. And then at the same time, if my kids saw some behavior that they were upset with, or, you know, my husband was frustrated, you know, it happened. I mean, 6 years is a long time to take care of somebody.
Yeah.
And it was disruptive. And she had her little dog here with us, and he was known as the Yorkshire Terrorist. But, you know, it's some things you just, you choose your battles and you decide what really matters. And I was very fortunate in that in most cases, my mom was a sweet little lady, and we had a good relationship to begin with. And that's not always true. You know, people have had history. My relationship with my mother-in-law, I remember one time my husband said to me, my dad adored my husband, and my dad passed away nearly 30 years ago. And he had a really good relationship with my husband, not so much with my brothers. And my husband said to me, so wise, excuse me, he said, you know, Brita, it's a lot easier to be a son-in-law than to be a son, because he had no history. My dad didn't discipline him when he was a young teenager and would go off and do something crazy or dangerous or whatever. And there was none of that baggage or history with the son-in-law. There was just, oh, isn't he great? He's a grown-up, and isn't he lovely? So I think we have to give ourselves and our siblings grace about the route, the path, the journey that we've been on, and recognize that nobody chooses this. Nobody wants this. But the alternative is so much worse.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to ask for your forgiveness, because, you know, I try to keep these interviews between 30 and 45 minutes, and we've gone over, but I still have more questions. So I want to ask you a couple more questions, sure, if you would be willing.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. We'll go just a little bit further. Thanks everyone for your patience as you're listening. But I wanted to ask about any new and inventive ways that caretakers are getting support for themselves and their parents. Because, you know, I know that because of your profile, your high profile, you get a lot of people who come to you for your different books, your resources, your one woman play, your one woman show. So, you know, I mean, at this point, you hear about the best of the best. In fact, one of the things I have marked here is one of the resources that I want to follow and look into. But are there any new and inventive ways that caretakers are getting support for themselves and their parents?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of it came out of COVID, actually, in a good way.
Oh, that's good.
One is, you know, the Amazon Echo, having some of the smart technology. You don't have to go search for a CD. You don't have to, like, when someone is having a hard time, you know, and I always remember that when someone with Alzheimer's, you don't say, yeah, dad's giving me a hard time today. Think of it as dad's having a hard time today, right? And that's why his behavior is whatever it is. But you can, you know, say, you know, play Frank Sinatra. Can we have a little bit of Elvis? How about some Motown? So whatever music from their era that is going to be helpful when you're in the middle of a tough situation and you can just ask the smart speaker to play that is amazing. Okay. So that's an easy use of technology. Another thing is, think about it with Uber and Lyft, that you can have and having food delivered to your home. There's so many things now that used to be such a problem. 10 years ago, when I was caring for my mom, I had to go and get everything. Now, almost everything could be delivered right to my door. So that's another thing you can do. If you have a sibling who's a primary caregiver, find a way to send them a treat.
You know, that's a good idea.
You know, send them some cookies, you know, really delicious, good cookies, or fresh coffee or wine or whatever it is that is a treat, not a holiday, not their birthday. Just say,
because, yeah,
you thank you for all you do.
Right? Oh, Brita, that is such a good idea.
So take advantage of all of, now it's so commonplace to have things delivered. Think about the music, you know, technology that way. Uber and Lyft to you know, transportation. Online, there are, just as there's, you know, really bad stuff and really, you know, cranky people, I have to say, I love when I'm on Facebook and I have a Facebook page called The Caregiver Coffee Break, it's full of inspiration. I mean, my rule is before I post anything, is it clever? Is it creative? Is it funny? Or inspiring, right? So four things. And if it fits those categories, I love to share it to give people a lift and to just help people think, you know, at this moment, somebody might need to hear this. So seek out those things. And at the same token, delete and block anything toxic, anything cranky, anything that puts you over the edge. You don't need it. You do not need that in your life.
Yeah.
So find these wonderful, positive organizations, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, whatever your thing is that you like, you can find them. And if they're at all, you know, upsetting or toxic or whatever, delete. You don't need it.
I love it. Well, I want to make sure that everyone knows, for those people who are listening to this as the audio podcast, the website is Brita Miller, BreedaMiller.com. And if you go there, Brita has so many different ways to not just reach out to her, but you can find out about her speaking. You can go in and you can access resources. Brita, I have to say, you do have some amazing resources on your website, and it's just really great to kind of go through there. Is there any other place that people can go where they can get helpful information or connect with you?
With me? Sure. Well, on Facebook, there is Caregiver Coffee Break, my personal page, which is, you know, it is what it is. It's Brita Kelly Miller. You're certainly welcome to go there. On LinkedIn, it's Brita Miller. But my website is really the home base. You know, they say that you shouldn't live on rented, you know, you don't want to build a house on rented space, which is what I view most social media. So my website is mine, and I'm very proud of it. There's links to learning about different projects that I'm involved in. And the other important thing when it comes to helping people, realizing that being a family caregiver, Rosalind Carter said it really well. There's four kinds of people in the world: those who were caregivers, those who are caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers. So whatever your, the people, whatever the title is, whether you are a service provider, a nurse, a social worker, a teacher, someone in any helping profession, you know this to be true, that if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be good to anyone. But for others in other businesses, in other organizations, caregiving, caring for family members, you know, the population is aging. And here's another interesting thing, just as it's hard to find support staff and employees in many businesses, home healthcare providers are really, really struggling to find good people, which means even if you have the means to hire people to help you in your house, many family caregivers just can't find them. Yeah. Which means the burden and the responsibility is even more so on family caregivers. We, and employers and organizations need to recognize that and to help their people take a break before they break.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Kiki. And if you want to revisit this topic and people send more questions, I'm happy to come back.
I will take you up on that offer. So thank you so much. Everyone, I have to say, what did you think of Brita Miller and all of her great advice? And I could have listened to her personify her mother all day long. And so you have to check out her one-woman show, hire her to do the one-woman show, buy her books, go to BritaMiller.com. I got to tell you, this topic actually really hits close to my heart, and it's something that I know that my family, we're asking a lot of questions about this topic right now, but I also know that based on what the statistics show, many of your families are dealing with this now. So I think if we can offer a little bit of grace to each other and maybe remember that we're all dealing with different things at home, some that we may never know that somebody else is dealing with, we're always going to be better off if we offer that grace. So that's the show for today. I thank you all. I thank you for being the Patreon supporters that are out there to help keep this show running. I hope you learned something of value today that you're going to take on with you into your life, into your work. And until next time, everyone, keep asking questions to learn every day. Because why? Because as Joseph Campbell once said, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. Have a great rest of the week, everyone.